Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Lars Melly, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Thank you, Lars. The second Lars that we know in the tennis world, behind Lars Graf, a fellow listener. Lars Melly, thank you very much for joining us here on the Tennis Podcast and introducing the show. He did so because he was one of our backers of the last year, and we're hugely appreciative. We are hugely appreciative to everybody that's backed us throughout the last 4 years, and specifically this year, because... Have we got a drum roll? Do we do those? No. We've funded ourselves.
Absolutely.
I was trying to do that with one hand. That didn't work.
Thank you, folks. We have funded ourselves by hitting our target already, and we've still got 6 days to go. Doesn't mean you have to stop. We will keep the Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign going for another 6 days, which means you can still get a shout out, you can still introduce a show, you can still enter the predictions competition and try unsuccessfully to win the two trophies off me. You can get a private podcast, you can guest edit a podcast, but most importantly of all, of course, you can just buy me two beers, Catherine Cheese and Matt's new hot drinks obsession that he seems to have going on.
Obsession might be too strong a word, but yes, liking.
But anyway, that's all up to you. We can't thank you enough for all of your support, and it means that the Tennis Podcast will keep rolling in 2020, and we are going to be producing as many of these shows and as good quality a show as we possibly can do over the next 12 months.
No specifications there about quality, just as good as we're able.
Yeah, hopefully they'll be all right, is basically what I'm saying. I'm back, and it's the Putney Exchange, as it was last week.
Rumours of a tan were exaggerated, Matt.
Yeah, I was correct. Mm.
It's nice here, isn't it? Except, you know, it's a bit cold. It's not like it was where I was. Oh, it's great.
And where you are going to be.
Yeah, well, yeah, my head's all over the place. Melbourne in 2 days' time, that's where we're headed. I'm sure all the violins are out. But we're on our way, yeah, to the other side of the world, because the tennis is about to start. The tennis has been going on. Oh, there's been a lot of it the last week, hasn't there? Let's start with Auckland, where Serena Williams has won a title for the first time in very nearly 3 years. And it feels to me like a really big deal. Does it feel to you like a really big deal?
Well, on the news at 10 last night on BBC One, it was in the news section.
Really?
Of last night's national
news,
not even in the sports section. So, yes, it is a huge deal. And there are so many little subplots to it, like the fact that last time she played there, brackets, and hated it... she was pregnant with her daughter and didn't know at the time. There's the little video that emerged last night of her long after the crowds had dispersed from the arena in Auckland. A completely empty stadium, and she's there with one of the members of her team doing cartwheels on the court, you know, taking videos of it, you know, as the sun setting over the stadium, just really emphasising what it meant to her, the significance of it. And I think more than anything, in terms of what it means in the bigger picture, she's won a final.
Hmm.
And for me, I think, you know, small event or not, or relatively small, that for me, that's big.
Yeah, I think there's both the kind of symbolic significance of the fact she was even back in Auckland. I never thought she would go back.
Yeah,
last time,
not sure she did.
Last time she lost, she said, well, at least I can get out of these conditions. She described them as abhorrent. And she's,
abhorrent?
Yeah, yeah. And she's back winning the title in this kind of new phase of her life, which started in Auckland. And then there's kind of the actual significance of it, of the fact that she's now won a final. I wasn't necessarily convinced about the argument that she needed to win a tour level final to win a Grand Slam final. Those pressures felt so different to me. And, you know, just because she's won a tour final, I don't automatically think she's going to win a Slam final. However, watching the moment she did it yesterday, the kind of relief and just the outpouring of all this kind of pent-up frustration when she actually won the match, I've now slightly changed my mind, and I think it was really significant. She needs that winning feeling back. It needs to become a habit again. She needs to kind of learn how to win again. This is someone who used to just win all the time. She needs to get that back. And actually, a comparison in another sport is Tiger Woods, how he won the Tour Championship at the end of one season in his comeback, and then went and won the Masters, the first kind of major of the next year. And I think a lot of people in golf thought that his win was really significant. The fact that he'd done it, okay, it was a reduced field, a smaller tournament like Serena's win in Auckland, but, you know, she was having trouble winning finals, and she had trouble at the start of that final against Jessie Pegula in Auckland. She was a breakdown, and she could have panicked. She could have thought, oh, God, this is happening again. She came through it. If she finds herself in a Grand Slam final again, at least she's got this new experience to draw upon. So I think it was really significant.
I found myself watching quite a lot of Serena Williams over the last week because of jet lag. Every time I seemed to wake up thinking it was 8 a.m. and it was 2 a.m., she was on the court. But she looked quite serene to me, without wishing to pun her name. It was the whole experience. She seemed to be just all of the bits seemed to be in the right place with the way her strokes were being played. You know, there was no clunkiness to her game. She might not be as quick as she used to be, but she was never sort of reaching for the ball and that kind of thing.
You say that in a very routine, matter-of-fact way. You're as if you're certain she's not as quick as she used to be. How much for you has she lost?
I don't know if I could put a percentage to it, but I just feel like when you're 38, you are slower. And
I'm sure. I just find it. But I'm just interested that you say that, because I find it very difficult to judge just watching something, unless I've got the side by side comparison.
I think you need to go back and
you need to
watch.
Be able to go back and
the thing
watch
is,
it fresh
she
in
used
the
memory. She used to look on court like Wonder Woman. That's what I always used to think. She had a superhero like quality, not just the way she used to hit the ball, but the way she would bound around the court. She was incredibly fast and agile and able to twist and turn direction. If you go back in the archives, I've got a little interview with her, I think back in about 2013, where I asked her whether she has any aches and pains now she's in her 30s, and she said none at all. You know, I still bounce out of bed, which is great, and I still think she looks incredibly supple for somebody of her age with the small amount of tennis that she's been playing over the last few years. But I think when you see her play certain other players these days who are, I mean, Andreescu is the obvious one to draw attention to, somebody who's similarly powerful and explosive and all the rest of it, I find Serena sometimes just seems a step late to the ball.
And I think Halep in the Wimbledon final, with her exceptional movement, kind of exposed how yes. Serena had maybe lost a step. I was struck, you used the adjective serene, and just kind of how happy she looked. And I did think that her playing doubles with Wozniacki is both significant from a kind of mental state point of view, but also her tennis. I mean, we talked at Wimbledon last year about how the doubles with Murray, the mixed, kind of helped her get a bit sharp in that tournament, because in doubles, you know, it's not necessarily about endurance-based movement. It's kind of explosive movements and reactions. And I think that might have helped her in Auckland, just get her sharpness back. And she's obviously not going to play doubles in Australia, but she can carry that into Melbourne, I think.
I do feel that if she were to go to the Australian Open, I know this is impossible, but if she went to the Australian Open and were playing best of five now, I think she'd win the title without question. Mm. Just because she would have time against everybody to play and weather whatever storm of form might come her way. There is still that danger that somebody gets hot against her and she doesn't recover in time.
But as we said at the time of the US Open final, I felt like that could have gone differently if it was best of five. I feel like a lot of the big matches that Serena's lost recently we'll obviously never know, but would likely have been pretty different had they been played over best of five.
Well, she has started so slowly in all of the last four Slam finals. I think there's a stat that she's lost her opening service game or her second service game in all of them.
Wow.
And she's getting behind and having to fight back. And, you know, she's playing opponents who are playing really well, so it's always going to be difficult. But it's interesting, you mentioned the US Open final. Obviously, a story that's happened this week is Andreescu is out of the Australian Open, which is both completely gutting, but also, I think, really significant when we're talking about Serena.
Yeah, I think it's almost as significant as this title win.
Agreed.
Yeah. Because of all the players, even if Serena's playing well, I think Andreescu is possibly capable of beating her, even if Serena's on.
Yeah, I agree. Agreed. And also, I think, just kind of mathematically, her being out pushes Serena up into a top eight seeding, which can be significant. So, kind of her being out of the way for Serena and helping her draw.
Yeah, and psychologically as well, I think Serena wants to feel like, this is in my hands. If I play my best, I've got this. You know, that if I play my best thing is big, especially in finals, obviously. But I think she would, I'm sure, never admit it publicly, might not even admit it to herself, but deep down, she probably knows and thinks what you just said, David, that even at her best, Andreescu's probably got her on a good day.
Because she's almost like, I mean, I don't want to say she's Mark II Serena, because Andreescu may never win anything else. Hopefully the fitness issues will be behind her. But she's the closest thing that I've come across in a player. I mean, I think Osaka has got a little bit of that X factor as well.
But a completely different character.
Mm.
It's the total conviction and lack of self-consciousness about Andreescu.
Where's Simon Briggs when you need him?
Check me out.
He's swanning around Australia is where Simon Briggs is.
He is.
He's been there for months already.
Did you see that video, by the way, that Wimbledon put out?
Oh,
amazing. Did you mention that last week? I don't think we did.
I don't know whether we did.
To keep up with all the hashtag content.
She played her first match in Auckland, and Wimbledon was a very good video. They put out a video celebrating the first match of Serena Williams as a 38-year-old, although her 2010 self might not have been that impressed with it, because in a 2010 clip at Wimbledon, she is shown to say, "If I'm on court at 38, I want you to personally escort me off it. There's no way I need to be out here at 38.
There's no one alert from Steve Redgrave. Atlanta 96, wasn't it?
Versus 2000 Sydney, and you have my permission to shoot if you see me in another boat.
In the rowing boat. That's not what they're called, is it? In the
Coxless Fours?
Yeah, that's the event. But would you
It's a boat, isn't it?
Is it a boat?
Yeah, we use boat on the tennis podcast.
Yeah, in the boat, he's there,
rowing,
you know, in a state of
bat.
Utter exhaustion.
This has not gone where I thought
this
it was.
This is for listeners, what, under the age of probably 25? Probably not aware of that reference. Yeah, he's just won his gold medal in the Coxless Fours at Atlanta 96. I think that was the only gold medal that Team GB won in Atlanta 96. Anyway, and he says, if you ever see me in a boat again, you got my permission to shoot me.
And then he won gold.
And then he won gold 4 years later.
And this is 10 years later.
So, yeah. Serena, I've been doing my research here, folks.
I think, didn't Steve Redgrove carry on until 2004 as well?
Don't know. Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. So that's 8 years.
So Serena, at that point in 2010 at Wimbledon, had, depending on when she gave that quote, had either won 12 or 13 slams at that point, aged 28.
Wow.
So a pitiful number.
So she's won basically another 9 or 10.
I think she's won over 10 in her 30s.
Right. So really, yeah, I mean, one assumes that is just, that underlines the point that it's history and history alone, really, that is why she's still out here doing this.
Of course it is.
And it comes from within?
It isn't from Federer, is it?
No, yeah, you're right. That was too flippant of me there. You're right. Of course it is with... Yeah.
Although Federer already has the men's record in terms of slams.
For now.
That's not to say that I don't think Serena Williams enjoys tennis. I think she loves competing. I don't think she loves winning. She loves being a champion and all that. But, I mean, I think she would have been completely content to call it a day had she had the record by a sufficient number. I think she'd have probably got bored by being the sole record holder.
It is a very, very different psychology, the position that she is in and has been in for the last decade to the one of Federer.
And also, you know, Serena is up against an historic number. You know, we know that 24 is the number to beat in terms of slams. Federer doesn't really know what number he's safe on.
Absolutely.
If you like.
He's not constantly being asked about a number.
Yeah.
In the way like, Serena is.
It's a moving picture in the men's game.
Is his clubhouse score enough?
Exactly.
Ooh, what an analogy. So many cross-sporting references today, folks.
So, when's the draw?
When we're in the air. Thursday.
Is it?
Thursday night in Melbourne. I think we will pretty much land and it will have just come out.
David and I landed about 11 p.m.
You can do internet on a plane now, can't you?
I've had to pay $100 to my Airbnb people because I get in at an ungodly hour.
for half an hour?
It's worse for me than it is for you.
Blimey.
That's poor.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm not going to name and shame them, but...
And it's down to you, our Kickstarter backers, that we're able
much.
To do this.
I think, again, I'm conscious of trying not to get too swept up by everything Serena-related, but I think the Australian Open is Serena's best chance outside of Wimbledon. I think it's a better chance for her than the US Open to win
a
slam,
agree,
because...
Yeah.
There's so much added pressure and interest at the US Open and stress and history that she's fighting there.
I think it's a better chance than Wimbledon.
You think it's an even better chance than Wimbledon?
I think so too.
Because I think the movement is not as challenging for her in the age she's in at right now. I know that the surface might help the serve and all that, and the serve...
That's kind of what I was thinking.
The serve was functioning so well in Auckland, by the way. It just looked to have a lovely rhythm to it, and she was getting 69% of them in. These are good numbers, really. But it's the last place she won a slam.
Yeah.
Got the good memories. She destroyed Sharapova in that final there, didn't she, as well? She doesn't have Andreescu to face. Barty might... be somebody she comes across, but we don't know how the situation
I think it's
might
safe
affect
to say
Barty.
We're swept up, Matt.
Yeah, we are, aren't we? And even last year, it was a bit of a freak exit with her when she rolled her ankle.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't
against
it?
Pliskova. Like, she'd looked really good in that tournament before then.
Pliskova's going to be out in the first round, though, so.
Why?
Well, yeah, we're not falling into that trap
she's
again.
Won a warm-up event and is looking great. I mean, Therefore, she will lose first
round. Arguably, she was even more impressive than Williams this week because of the players she had
Which
to beat.
Which makes me more sure she is not winning the title.
She won Brisbane. She's now coached by Danny Valvidou. And the person who was giving the on-court coaching was Olga Savchuk, who delivered one of the most entertainingly deadpan on-court coaching lectures that I've heard. This after Pliskova had won the first set against Madison Keys in the final. Olga Savchuk comes out, kneels next to her, and she goes, "You are just total flat right now. You are kaput."
She was winning.
She goes, "There's a reason."
It's not a hype.
She goes,
"That's not a hype man, is it?"
She goes, "That's the reason you feel like shit." And Pliskova was just like,
it's like my internal monologue.
Pliskova was just nodding her head, and just because that's how she would deliver an on-court coaching chat as well. I'm quite sure of it. Just straight to the point, no airs and graces, and it was great. But I mean, the people Pliskova beat, she beat Osaka with Osaka playing really, really well, didn't she?
That was the one, wasn't it?
I think the best tennis I saw all week was from Brisbane. Like, you had six of the top 10 there, and you know, just players you expect to do well did well. Like, a lot of people did well at last year's Australian Open. Kvitova, Osaka, Pliskova, they were all did well in Brisbane, and I think they all made a statement that their tennis is looking really sharp at the start of the season. And for Pliskova to beat Osaka playing as well as Osaka was seriously impressive. But there's something about Brisbane which really suits Pliskova. Like, there's no wind, it's kind of covered, there's no sun, she's completely uninhibited. She's allowed to play her tennis, and purely her tennis, you probably would say, is pretty much the best that there is when she's on, because of her serve and the way she hits the ball so cleanly. But
did you say her tennis was the best there is when she's on?
When she's completely allowed to play, I don't think she reacts well to
extraneous factors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And whereas Andreescu and Serena would.
Because I've not been. My parents have been, and I remember them coming back. It was while they were living out there and I was visiting. Anyway, I think my dad took himself off there on his own on his motorbike.
He had a motorbike.
What a hero.
So he has a boat, folks. And he has a motorbike.
No, people are going to stop giving us money for the Kickstarter if they think my dad owns his own yacht. He does not have a boat. Well, actually, built himself a little...
Built
his own boat, like a rowing boat with an outboard
next
motor.
Next podcast feature will be...
named it after our dog.
Are you good enough company to go on the back of the motorbike?
But he does not own a yacht of any description.
Okay, right.
But anyway, I remember my parents... Their immediate feedback was, it just feels like an indoor event.
Right.
Brisbane.
Because they have a canopy over the top.
Canopy, yeah, basically feels indoor. Yeah.
I've commentated on it a load of times from afar, but what is it about Pliskova that wins all of these tournaments beforehand? I mean, does she lack a chip in her makeup that stops her from peaking? Because I think there are certain players throughout the time that I've been watching tennis that I almost feel like they treat every week the same, and I always cringe when a player loses in a slam and goes, well,
there's always next week.
The good thing about tennis is there's always next week.
No, there isn't. No, absolutely, I agree.
I don't know whether Pliskova is one of those. I don't know her well enough to know, but she takes great pride in these titles, and so she should, but still.
If I'm doing her a disservice here, I'm looking at you, Matt, for the memory bank here. I feel like when she lost first round of the French, having won Rome, I feel like she might have said something along those lines. certainly in my head anyway.
I mean,
possibly unjustly, yes, she is for me one of those players you've
I suppose
just
it's a defense mechanism to some degree, isn't it, to trot a line out like that anyway. But it always I'm underwhelmed by that.
And I don't know whether this is a kind of lazy take to have, but you mentioned the on-court coaching that she had. I still feel like she is potentially a little too reliant on that in tour events. Now, I know we've seen Halep certainly overcome that reliance and transfer it to a slam and win two of them where she's not able to have that input. But I don't know. Pliskova is very... You never see her do what Andreescu did and kind of make a commitment to not having on-court coaching at a tournament. And she then goes into a slam and she can't have it. I don't know. It just feels like that is got to be a little bit of a factor in this for me.
I wonder whether actually... I mean, I only saw that one coaching visit. I didn't see that much of Brisbane. I wonder whether Dani Valverde's view... First time coaching a female player, maybe he may have that view a little more. We'll see. What happened to Ash Barty? She lost in straight sets.
Ash Barty.
Yeah, 6-4, 7-6.
It was very in-form Jennifer Brady, who had come through qualifying, took out Sharapova.
Is that that's not a thing?
That's
anymore,
not really though. A thing, though, is it? But, and then, yeah, just I didn't see much of the match against Ash Barty, so I can't comment too much on how Ash Barty was looking, but it's the sort of loss Barty just hasn't been having for ages, and the fact that it's happened in her first kind of big tournament back in Australia is a little bit of a concern.
Is she playing Adelaide this week, or is that it for her proper...
I think that's it.
She is, yeah, I think, unless she's taken a wild card, which
She did get to the doubles final, so she got matches. It's not the same, is it?
No. A worry.
Oh, hold on. She is playing Adelaide, yes. Okay. And she's the top seed, and she's playing first round against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, who has thrashed Annette Kontaveit of Estonia in the first round.
That's a good one for Pavlyuchenkova.
It's a really good draw in Adelaide. There's Halep, there's Sabalenka, Bencic, Kenin. Crikey, it's packed.
It's
very interesting.
Halep didn't play last week, did she?
No.
So this is her only warm-up event. It's a very interesting week, this one, because of course Djokovic is playing.
No, he's pulled out.
Has he?
He's pulled out.
I found it so interesting that he was ever planning to play.
I didn't quite work out whether he signed up for the rally for relief of the bushfires, whether that came before he pulled out of Adelaide or not. But
I think it was after.
Yeah, okay. Have we talked about that? I don't think we have. That's on Wednesday, isn't it?
Yes.
The Rally for Relief, which is to raise money for those affected by the bushfires, which is fantastic to see Tennis Australia putting up this event with Djokovic and Serena Williams and Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, all the biggest names in the sport, all going to try to raise as much money as they can. I know the ATP gave a huge check of $750,000 to the cause a couple of days ago as well. I know we're talking about tennis and we're getting swept up in the sport because we are a tennis podcast, but we are also very mindful of what's going on out there at the moment. And, we're thinking of everybody that is affected by it, and we will bring you a flavour of what we experience when we're out there as well. You two talked about it last week, and I thought put it very well. You're caught between the sort of irrelevance of sport in context of a disaster like that, but at the same time of thank goodness for sport. Ultimately, thank goodness for it.
I really don't buy the irrelevance of sport thing in the face of. I've never been comfortable with that sort of reflex of everyone to say, oh, this frivolous stuff isn't relevant. No, it brings a lot of people a lot of pleasure, and that's just as valid as it makes it even more important in the face of horrible things to
when
cling to the things that bring you pleasure. It's perfectly fine to get pleasure from sport.
And it's also
from anything.
An opportunity, as the players and the tournament are showing, that they can actually make a difference,
yeah. Mm.
which is great.
And we should probably say Serena donated all her Brisbane prize money to the relief efforts, and the ATP also announced, I think it was a $725,000 Australian dollars going to the wildlife funds.
Yep. Very good. Very good. Other results on the WTA Tour. Shenzhen, Ekaterina Alexandrova beat Elena Rybakina to win the title there.
Hits the ball very, very hard, Alexandrova.
Sure does. Sure does.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So that's the WTA. What about the ATP?
Cup.
The ATP Cup. Won by Serbia. And, I mean, you both discussed it in depth last week as an event, so I'm not going to go over all the old ground of that. What about week two of it? What about what we've seen over the last week? First takeaway is it was a really big deal to that Serbian team, wasn't it, to win this? I think particularly because of what happened at the Davis Cup. It's almost like another kind of angle to it all, because I still find the multitude of team events deeply unsatisfactory. It doesn't work for me. I want to see all of it streamlined and packaged into one brilliant one. But that one little narrative there, from a Serbian perspective, that was a bigger win for them than if Spain had won that ATP Cup.
Yes, but only because of what had previously happened in the Davis Cup.
Yeah.
So.
But also because the Serbian following in that stadium,
yes,
and throughout the
true.
Week was so enormous.
It was mind-blowing. Yeah. Really mind-blowing. I mean, you had Nenad Zimonjic giving feedback to Mohamed Lejani during the Djokovic-Nadal match about how Lejani should be marshalling the Serbian support, the Serbian fans. He said, give up trying to speak in Serbian, mate. Just you're in Australia, just speak English.
It was really extraordinary how many Serbians, like, not, because there were loads in Brisbane and also loads in Sydney, like the sort of Serbian communities in Australia are clearly huge.
Well, they're big, but they're also incredibly passionate, yeah, about their own sports people. There is just an enormous,
yeah,
pride in their sports people. They live through their sports people,
yeah, and which is wonderful.
And I think the thing is, I watched this a lot over the court. I watched pretty much all of Serbia's matches, and it was just such an interesting dynamic to see Djokovic playing in front of a completely partisan crowd on his side, and he being the man, the hero, and not having to put up with some of the stuff that he has to put up with at times, and how much he just embraced it.
Yeah, he loved it.
He loved it. And also, I mean, he did get... I felt he got pretty tight against Shapovalov at times, who played really, really well in that match they played in the semis, was it?
Quarters. It was Russia in the semis against Medvedev.
Yes, Russia in the semis. But he handled it. And, I just found his body language... It was probably all I expected it to be. He was just... He just loved it. It's what he's been waiting for.
He seems to have this ability to use the crowd however he finds it. You know, if we've talked so much about how when it's against him, he doesn't like it, but so often he's been able to use it to make himself play better. And when it's with him, he's able to use it to make himself play better as well. I think if the ATP Cup has done anything for kind of how I view these players, I don't think it's changed a massive amount, but it has made me, you know, more convinced by Djokovic, I think, than I was. You know, back end of last season, there were maybe a few concerns about Djokovic's level, you know, the way he kind of faded quite badly at the ATP Finals, for example. But he is looking so good. I mean, who, if he plays like that, no one's beating him in Melbourne.
He's the business, isn't he? I mean, to the extent that we were debating, and it was a given that unless something mad happens in the next week, we're all picking him as our favourite to the Australian Open. We were debating, would you pick the field or Djokovic?
Hold on a minute. Have I said this?
Come on, David.
Who else are you picking? Who's not the favourite? No, who's the favourite if it's
not
Djokovic?
Well, no, he's the favourite, yeah. But am I picking him? That's another matter.
If I had to ask you now, who's winning the Australian Open?
I haven't decided yet.
I'm asking you now, who's winning the Australian Open?
I'm not convinced it's Djokovic.
Well, name me another individual, that's the thing. I'm saying there's a debate to be had, I think, about Djokovic versus the field.
Look,
but name me another individual that's more likely to win it than Djokovic.
Well, there isn't one that's more likely to. And this is counterintuitive, but it almost feels like things are going too perfectly to me. I think that he has had such a high just now. I don't know if that helps.
I think that is going to be the interesting...
Because we've never had this before. Only time you've had this before is when he's won the French Open and gone into Wimbledon. It's the only comparable thing.
No,
but it's
winning
not the same.
French Open is not the same as
winning
the ATP Cup.
I know it's not the same, but look at him. For him, this particular moment was a big deal. It was a bigger deal for him than it would have been for Nadal if he'd have won it.
But I think it's more of an experiential big deal than it is an achievement big deal. I think he's got to recalibrate now. It was huge and he's loved it. There have obviously been big celebrations in the crowd and all of that. But like we've said with Laver Cup, in 2 years' time, no one is describing Novak Djokovic as an ATP Cup winner. I'm sorry, but they're not.
No, agreed. I know, but this was a big deal to him personally. That's what I'm talking about. And he...
I just think it's different.
He will now have to recalibrate and go into the Australian Open in a frame of mind with a different past to any of the other Australian Open titles that he's won.
I do find it interesting that he's obviously had to make significant adjustments to how he'd intended to prepare for this Australian Open.
Because he had intended
to play Adelaide. That's what he had planned for. And he intended to play Adelaide knowing that because ATP Cup's around Robin, even if they hadn't won it, he knew he was going to get a good number of matches. And yet he still wanted to play Adelaide. So I find that quite interesting. I just find the whole psychology of him thinking he was going to play Adelaide interesting.
I agree about that. I wonder what was going on in his mind. We must ask him about that.
Because there was that one bizarre year where he played Eastbourne. wasn't there?
Yes. But I think he was struggling
lost in the
at
final.
The time,
no,
wasn't he?
He won Eastbourne.
Yeah.
But that was when he'd lost early at Queen's?
No, he didn't play Queen's.
That was when he got beaten 6-love in the third set by Team at the French.
Yes.
In like the quarters or something.
And then
and he just
the,
looked like a... You know, that was nothing of him left.
He took a late wild card, didn't he, to Eastbourne?
Yeah.
I don't know, I just... Yeah. This is a new situation that these players find themselves in. And I think it's so tempting to just think nobody will compete with him when he's playing like that.
And I don't think that, by the way.
I genuinely think
there are players that can compete with him.
See, I think
Medvedev and Shapovalov both competed with him
closely this week. I think if he plays like he did in the final against Nadal in the ATP Cup, and if he played... even more so like he did in the final last year, I do think he wins the title.
Yeah.
He is, when he's playing like that, he's the best player in the Australian Open, probably in the Australian Open's history on the men's side. But he's peaked for the ATP Cup final, and now he's got to try and peak again.
So I'm asking you now, David, who are you picking to win the Australian Open?
Well, I haven't decided that yet. But I'm not picking Novak Djokovic.
Now.
I'm not picking
now,
Novak Djokovic. I'm picking the field.
That's not the question. That was my original question. Then you interrupted and said, whoa, he's not the individual that I'm picking.
He's not.
This is going well. You have to pick an individual now. Stage two of the debate is Djokovic versus the field. Stage one is to establish, when you've stopped being an annoying contrarian, that Novak Djokovic... is the individual pick at the moment.
Medvedev.
You're picking Andre Medvedev right now.
Andre?
To win the Australian...
Yeah.
Oh, God.
20 years on, he's going to come back.
You're picking Daniil Medvedev. Oh, God. That's what you've done to
all
me.
All we've got is the metronomic... What is it? The metronomic...
The memories and the metronomic winning of titles.
Oh, and the Australian Open title.
Are you being a contrarian, or are you picking Daniil Medvedev right now?
No, I'm waiting.
The question is now, David, for the purposes of debate, which is what we do on this podcast.
I'm not picking Novak Djokovic.
I'm asking you to pick an individual right now.
Daniil Medvedev.
Change it. Okay, done. He's totally being a contrarian.
I actually think Daniil Medvedev is the most likely to beat Djokovic.
Agreed.
But I don't think he's the second most likely to win the title, oddly.
Yes, I think I agree with that as well.
But I think Medvedev came, even though Shapovalov took Djokovic to, I think it was a third set tiebreak, wasn't it? I think Medvedev caused Djokovic the most problems, matchup-wise, mental-wise. Medvedev-Djokovic is a match I want to see.
Yes,
who are the other players do you feel that could beat Djokovic? I'm not talking about if Djokovic is injured or anything like that, or if he's suddenly completely lost his form. But if he plays at an 8 out of 10 level, who can still beat him?
Team, Tsitsipas.
Federer.
I would put Federer in.
I still think on one amazing day Wawrinka can do it. I mean, I know Djokovic was injured in New York, but...
When I said Federer, neither one of you were really with me on that.
Well, we've got no evidence in the past, what, 7 years, that he can beat Djokovic over 5 sets. He came very close at Wimbledon, but he didn't do it.
Nadal?
Again, on a hard court, that matchup... is so bad.
If Nadal was fresh, I would say yes.
I think any hard court. He's not won a set against Djokovic on a hard court since 2013.
The way Nadal was playing at the end of last year, I would have gone for it. If they'd have played each other at the Davis Cup, I'd have gone for Nadal.
But would you have gone for Nadal because of the fact it was in Spain?
Yeah.
There was something extra for Nadal.
Well, he was just playing out of his mind as well, wasn't he?
And I think that's the thing for me, going back to the ATP Cup, the way I feel about it is that the ATP Cup was not career-defining for Djokovic in the way that winning the Davis Cup was at the end of last season was for Nadal.
No, I definitely agree with that. I just think that it still... It, Djokovic kind of made it into his Davis Cup because that's the best he could do, isn't it? I mean, he couldn't win the Davis Cup this year. Maybe he will at the end of the year. But
interesting what you were saying about peaking for the ATP Cup, bringing Federer into the conversation. I mean, he's not had any tennis, so he's obviously going to be completely peaking for the Australian Open. Do you think he is an advantage then compared to the field? The fact that he's rested, or
no,
the fact that he's not played is a problem?
I would, for his supporters' sake, I would hope he gets a tame draw.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because he needs to play his way in a bit.
Kevin Anderson in round one is the kind of, you know, Kevin Anderson's unseeded.
Eesh.
And he looked good at the ATP Cup. That's the sort of, that would be a nightmare.
I mean,
unseeded Kevin Anderson is everyone's worst nightmare.
Admittedly, Federer has enough racket skill that if he happens to feel good on any given day,
I mean,
he can play tennis that you only dream about.
Look back on that draw he had in 2017, you know, Noah Rubin, I think, in round one.
And he was
one,
scratchy in that first
round. Really
Jürgen
scratchy.
Meltzer.
Jürgen Meltzer, and then suddenly Thomas Burdick.
Yeah.
And it
happened. But if he had had Thomas Burdick any earlier than that,
yeah,
could have been an entirely different state of affairs.
How knackered did Nadal look? I've watched
that. Well,
he
hasn't had an off-season.
The look on his face, he looked so drawn.
Week one, and he looks like that.
When he didn't play the doubles, that was a moment where I feel that you have to just acknowledge the status of the competition.
Yep.
I think it was really a good tournament overall. It was well run. It was well presented, as we always thought it would be. It's not what it was being. There was still too much of this, like you get at Laver Cup, making out that it's the most important thing ever and that it's that there's nothing wrong with it at all. Well, you know, we know that there's a situation here that just doesn't make any sense. So I went round my mum and dad's house last night, and my mum said to me, "What's the point of this one they're playing at the moment? Haven't they just had this?" She said to me. Now, she's,
I mean, it's quite difficult to answer that, isn't
she,
it?
She likes tennis. Yeah. She watches it. She listens to us. But it doesn't make any sense to her. And so these are problems. But look, there were lots of good things about it as well. I definitely think it was more entertaining than the other kind of typical warm-up tournaments that you get. I thought overall, and we got some amazing memories of matches. You think of Dan Evans against Diminor, and that doubles the British team played, which they lost. And
yeah, Jamie Murray has one in particular very bad memory from that match.
But I mean, Nadal, basically, he would not have pulled out if that had been the Davis Cup final. Obviously, Madrid elevates things because it's his home country. But he also wouldn't have done that, I don't think, had the Australian Open not been just around the corner. He prioritised. You have to prioritise. And this is the problem with so many of these things. Where are your priorities? So that's one side. But I would worry for Nadal being able to last the course. And I've said that before about him and been proved wrong, because he's the most extraordinary athlete and competitor I think I've ever seen, but goodness me, he needs his canister recharging sharpish.
Yes, it's a bad time of year to require some canister recharging. I mean, maybe he's going to have to approach this season like Federer has talked about before, as in the post-Australian Open period being his off-season.
Folks, this is not Catherine getting a phone call. This is telling us that Catherine needs to take off her eye patch, which she started wearing, and attend to her infected eye, which requires hourly treatment at the moment. So Matt and I will carry
on
talking.
Including through the night.
Including through the night. So, yes, we have to feel very, very sorry for Catherine.
It's an actual nightmare.
Yes, it is. But fortunately, the schedule is that it will all be sorted by the time we get to the Australian Open.
I've got a countdown clock on my phone that counts down the hour. It's like 24.
Yeah.
It's like I'm the Jack Bauer of eye disease.
And if anyone's ever seen Lost, where they have to push a button every hour to survive.
Yep.
Oh dear, that sounds a bit stressful.
Yeah. Well, this is real life
I haven't lost. Seen that before.
In a way.
By the way, how good was Roberto Bautista Agut? Was he beaten at all by anybody?
No, he went six wins, zero losses in his singles. I mean, the slight caveat to that, and a problem with the ATP Cup, is that four of those matches were against players ranked outside the top 100. I mean, and three of those were, you know, like a lot outside the top 100. And how good is that preparation for Bautista Agut? And also he won, you know, you get points based on the caliber of opponent that you face at the ATP Cup. He got four wins in the first four matches and only earned 85 points. You know, that's
whereas
that's
Dan
nothing.
Evans has earned, what, 150 grand and moved up 10 ranking spots.
He's at a career high 33 in the world. Yeah. So well done, Dan Evans.
So he's done well from the ATP Cup. I was quite sold on it by the end of the week, experientially. I got a lot of enjoyment from watching it. Pound for pound, there were more individual matches that I was pumped about watching, probably on aggregate, than there would have been if from a normal tour event. I wasn't that sold on the meaning of it, and I, as previously discussed, I resent having the meaning of it rammed down my throat, and I also just don't think that's necessary, because it's a cool thing, enjoy it for what it is, you know, see Laver Cup arguments ad infinitum. I'm happy. I still think absolute no-brainer, make it a combined event. I know Tennis Australia have announced that they intend to do a WTA Cup next year. I mean, still seems bonkers to me. I still feel like, guys, you had the Hopman Cup. Anyway, but I was quite sold on it as an experience. And, yeah, lots of individual matches that I loved, enjoyed, was pumped about. I did find myself, though, after watching Nadal v Djokovic going into the doubles, as soon as Nadal pulled out of that doubles, I found my interest level plummeting, because I was no longer hugely interested in the doubles matchup in itself. Nadal versus Djokovic in doubles, I'm really interested in. But just a sort of doubles match that Djokovic is in, not that interested in as a matchup, and I wasn't. I didn't think the stakes were that high. I wasn't interested that much in the outcome. I know all those scenes of jubilation. I'm not saying it doesn't mean anything to the Serbian team. I suspect to Viktor Troicki it does mean an awful lot. And as I say, experientially, Djokovic is on a massive high. But offer him 10 ATP Cups or one Davis Cup, and you're taking the Davis Cup. Honestly, no. Unless something changes about that competition, I really don't think anyone's describing Novak Djokovic as an ATP Cup winner in 10 years.
Title-wise, I agree with you. I didn't really feel like that was the point, though. The point was...
But people are trying to tell us that's the point.
No, I understand that, but I think the point to him, when you say offer him 10-1, I know that's an exaggeration, but my point would be the meaning to him was to be in front of a stadium full of adoring fans from or with Serbian heritage who all felt what he felt and were all in it for the same cause, whether or not it's a kind of...
Absolutely, but you'd get that regardless of trying to confer meaning on the actual title.
But without the title, you wouldn't have those scenes.
You would. I mean, if it were the Hopman Cup, I think... We've never seen Djokovic in Hopman Cup,
well, we
have
don't
we?
Know that, do we?
I think the problem is when you've got so many team events, like even two team events, like we've got Davis Cup and ATP Cup, the meaning becomes so individual. It's based on your experience at that tournament rather than the overall meaning being kind of the same for everyone. You know, the ATP Cup might end up meaning more for Serbia than the Davis Cup because they won it. People who were able to watch more of the ATP Cup because of the time zone or whatever, or because they struck a TV deal in the US, will end up thinking that the ATP Cup's better. We might think that the Davis Cup meant more because we committed to doing daily podcasts. We were watching it. I was there. I was more invested in it. Rather than a kind of global meaning for everyone, you get fragmented meaning, and that's not what you want.
Every time I watch one of these team events, I come away thinking, these are great.
Yeah.
The matches are great. The doubles is elevated. You get more from the players, but wouldn't just imagine if it was a fifth slam. I can't say it any more straightforwardly than that. Mm-hmm. Imagine if all of them were just pooled. Fed Cup, Davis Cup, AZB Cup, Labour Cup. Let's create the fifth slam. And men and women, just imagine it.
Let's have a big
party. Oh, I know. It would be amazing. But part of the problem is, I was going through kind of a list of criteria that everyone wants ticking off from these team events, and you can't just get everything in one event, you know, because some people want home and away ties, some people want a World Cup style. Most people, I think, want men and women together. We certainly do.
But you could have one round of home and away.
I agree. I think, for me, I kind of feel like in my head I solved the issue last night. I was kind of thinking, why
don't worry, everybody, Matt sorted it.
Why don't we have, you know, Hotman Cup at the start of the year, a mixed team event, in the kind of format of the ATP Cup. So it's played across mm-hmm. the different cities, it's got room to breathe, it is the start of the season, there are ranking points, it's ATP, WTA together. And then every other year, you've got the Davis Cup's played every other year and the Fed Cup's played every other year, and you've got two rounds of home and away and a finals. You know, I think then you get your team event, you get your home and away, you get points of difference, so there's more meaning.
Yep, done. Sold.
You know, I know David still wants one event, and I do get that, but I think we're at a point now where I don't think you can get all these desires into one event. There's too many.
I think you could.
Too much.
I think
that
if you wanted,
wants.
If you wanted to do it, you could do it. I'm going to come up with a blueprint. Okay.
Yep.
Right. Leave it with me. right.
Can I just say on the one thing that really struck me watching the ATP Cup is how sort of emotional all the men were.
Yeah. Like, can we just put to bed now
the idea that it is only like on-court coaching? I think one of the problems with only having it in the women's game has created this false idea that it's only the women on the court who are emotional and kind of the men. I mean, there was serious grounds for disqualification or default for, you know, a couple
at least
of events.
Two cases.
Tsitsipas and Medvedev could have gone.
I mean, Medvedev, there's pretty wide consensus that had that not been the ATP Cup, and brackets the fact that we're entering that into the equation, again, points to a bunch of other things, but probably should have been defaulted
he hit the umpire's
consciously
chair.
Yeah. In a very calculated way, bashing his racket into the umpire's chair.
And Diego Schwartzman, who seems like the nicest man in the world, called him an idiot to his face. Like, you know, like
the umpire.
No, Medvedev.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah.
It was aggro-tastic, the ATP Cup.
Oh, it absolutely was. And occasionally it pushed the boundary of what's acceptable, but more aggro, better.
Perfectly acceptable on the show.
No, perfectly acceptable, but people need to, you know, when they're talking about the women's game, they need to think that it's fine then as well.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be fine in the men's and a massive problem in the women's.
But it's
just
also
aggro.
There's the layers of, you know, emotions that are associated with being feminine are instantly associated with fragility, whether it's typically what are considered to be typically masculine emotions, or the masculine expression of emotions, i.e. sort of anger and aggression, those are somehow perceived in a different way, and you've got to think about the lens through which you're perceiving that. Tears are perceived as weakness, whereas sort of an aggressive angry outburst is perceived as some sort of show of strength. Well, I think that perception comes from a place of unconscious bias. It's like the irony of, someone pointed out on Twitter, the irony of Marat Safin making the comments he did back in the day about women being too emotional to play tennis.
Right.
You're like, breaking 3 rackets per match, Mara.
you actually broke 50 plus in a year once. Anyway,
it's just different types of emotional expression.
His compatriot, Andrei Rublev, champion in Doha, which I have to say I didn't see a ball of. It wasn't on Prime
Me
Video.
Me neither, move on quickly.
He didn't drop a set. It was a 28 draw.
I told you. What?
28 draw.
That's like a...
32 and then with four byes.
Park wow. competition. I told you Rublev's going to have a big year, didn't I?
Well, he's off and running. And that's about it. Before our flight, in which I will not be reclined on by Catherine Whittaker, because I refuse to sit behind her.
I'll be reclining on someone, though, because I think it's fine.
As long as they're not 6 foot a million. I'll try to keep composed. We have some shout-outs to make before we sign off, folks, to our Kickstarter backers, Nicola, Ada Pesch, and Caroline Alcock. Thank you all very much for supporting the Tennis Podcast, which so many of you done. 1,356 people at last look have supported the Tennis Podcast so far this year. We still have 5 or 6 days to go. If you'd like to chip in and just do your bit, it won't go to waste. Look, we're looking to make as many of these shows as we possibly can, and it all goes into funding the travel and the beers and the cheese boards and all the rest of it, and we're hugely appreciative. But thank you to everybody that's got us to our target. We fly to Melbourne on Wednesday. The first of our podcasts will be on Friday, and of course we are brought to you in association with our mascot for the year, which is Butler. Now, Butler is a what sort of dog? Is Butler
Hungarian Vizsla?
Mm. Look at Catherine's face.
And last week, you were wondering what tennis player most resembles a Vizsla, but the wonderful owners of Butler, Russell and Brad, have been in touch.
Big fans of Russell and Brad.
Now, this is quite long, but it's gold, so I'm going to read it out.
Go on.
Vizslas are sporting, hunting dogs and are extremely athletic with a lot of energy. They're also a very sensitive and emotional breed and are demonstratively affectionate. They tend to always want to be with people, hence the nickname the Velcro Vizsla. They cuddle you at night and crawl into your lap during the day. While always lovely, it can be a little neurotic and anxious at times because they become so attached to you. Now, all pro tennis players are elite athletes, of course, but we try to think of those whose games are particularly predicated on their athleticism.
This is already the best email we've ever received.
At the same time, thinking of those who really wear their heart on their sleeves and are or have been at times very emotive, but not emotive in a kind of aggro, obnoxious way, in a more sensitive, endearing, affectionate, or even anxious way. We came up with Jana Novotna, Sabine Lisicki, Petra Kvitova, Grigor Dimitrov, Pete Sampras, and Andy Murray. We're very interested to hear who Catherine comes up with.
Well, I had thought of Dimitrov. Mm.
That was the one that jumped out at me based on that description.
Yeah, because there's the neediness described there. There's a neediness, a really endearing neediness about Dimitrov that's probably also what's holding him back from achieving his full potential, but it's the thing that makes you want to give him a hug rather than say, pull yourself together, Grigor. They're very lean Vizslas. So when I said Bangdartis,
our guest of a few weeks ago.
No, well, he said in that interview that he put on a lot of muscle, didn't he? He's a beefy, stocky, agricultural kind of guy.
She's using all the past references here.
Whereas Vizslas are really lean and sinewy.
Yes.
In a sleek sort of way. God, I'm talking myself into an absolute hole. When's that alarm going to go off again? So I would say Dimitrov.
Just feels very appropriate.
Okay. Yeah, very athletic. Well-groomed.
The Tennis Podcast Zone.
But
Grigor
sort of
Dimitrov. So by association, Grigor Dimitrov is kind of like our mascot this
Which
year.
Has been the case for... Yeah.
Many a year.
Yeah.
The circle has been completed. Fantastic. I should say as well, we have an Australian Open mascot who is...
Do we ever.
who is crumbled.
There's been a photo shoot, folks.
You will not believe the photos Jim Boyle has sent us of Crumble. We will be posting them. And we've been just sort of going gaga here in the coffee shop watching them. Anyway, that's all to come. We should also say that a Reddit page has been
set up by listener
Ian.
We've got a subreddit.
Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest with you, you're talking double Dutch to me. I don't really know what Reddit and subreddit means, but I know that Ian, our faithful listener, has set this up. And basically, it's a place where you can go and chat to fellow listeners about tennis and stuff like that, correct?
Yeah, and even more specifically, the tennis podcast.
It's a safe space for nerdy chat.
Yeah. So, right, on your show notes, when you finish listening to this show, which is basically right now, scroll down, you can click and you can sign up to the Reddit page and chat to fellow tennis podcast listeners. If you do decide, actually, you know what, I think I'll do my bit for the Kickstarter as well, that's still open. Click on that, chuck in whatever you feels appropriate. Sign up to our newsletter, which will be going out in the next couple of days with weekly predictions. We'll have a daily newsletter as well throughout the Australian Open. And of course, tell all your friends, all your family, all your mates, all your acquaintances, the doctor, doesn't matter who it is, tell them about the tennis podcast. Maybe they will like to listen to this nonsense as well. And we will be coming to you every single day from Friday in Melbourne, because we are on our way down under.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.